You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome, 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 welcome to another edition of the Eagle Sports Zone. And as usual, I am your host, Hendy. I will be with you until 8 p.m. on this Sunday, on this cool Sunday evening in the capital, coming to you live from our studio in Windhoek. And you are now tuned into the Eagle Sports Zone, Eagle FM's very own in-house sporting programs where we discuss all things sports. But we like to peel back the curtain. We like to look at what's happening in the sporting world. What happens in the sport world that makes what we see on the field, on the court, in the pool happen? What happens behind the scenes? What is the actual money driver in this sporting industry that we love so much? As usual, make sure you're following us on all of our social media pages. That's Facebook, that's Instagram, that's X, that's LinkedIn, that's WhatsApp. To follow us on WhatsApp, send us a message at 081-200-4144. That's 081-200-4144. That is also the number you can message on WhatsApp, and make sure to save as a contact if you'd like to become a subscriber of the Villager newspaper. That is the paper for your latest and greatest in business, economics, trade, agriculture, policy developments, sports. You know, yours truly writes a few sports articles in there, and I can tell you that there will be a sports article in there tomorrow about part of what we're going to discuss shortly here on the Eagle Sports Zone. But make sure you send us a WhatsApp message, and you can subscribe to the Villager newspaper completely free, directly to your mobile device. And you can get it on email as well if you give us your email address. Now, also make sure if, you know, you, for whatever reason, you weren't able to tune into your favorite Eagle FM program, you weren't able to tune in live, you weren't able to tune into Unpacking the Day, you weren't able to tune into Early Morning Scoop, you weren't able to tune into The Home Run, whichever show you like on Eagle FM, and you had to miss it because, you know, life got in the way, then fear not, my friends, fear not, because at Eagle FM we have the perfect solution for you, and that is our podcast library. What is the podcast library, you ask? That is the section where every single thing that has been broadcasted on Eagle FM over the years is available for you in the podcast section. So if you want to listen to last week's Eagle Sports Zone, last year, whatever it is, simply go to the podcast section that is on the Eagle FM website at www.eaglefm.com.na, or simply download our mobile application that is free to download on your default app store on your mobile device. Simply click the podcast section and you will have access to any show that it is you are looking for. So, with that said, let's get into our first point of discussion today. But before we get to that point of discussion, make sure you join the conversation by dialing 083-288-401. If you have any questions for me, if you have any comments for me, if you have any concerns for me, anything you want to say regarding sport, do call into the Eagle Sports Zone at 083-288-401. That's 083-288-401. Now we're going to start with some local sporting news first. We're going to go to the Namibian Football Association. And why are we going to the Namibian Football Association? It's because the president of the Namibian Football Association, Mr. Robert Shimoshili, was elected to the executive committee of COSAFA that took place this weekend. Today, actually, over in Zimbabwe, in Harare. So they elected the COSAFA Executive Committee that will stand between 2026 and 2029. The new president of COSAFA is going to be Tariq Babitseng from Botswana. The vice president will be Alfred Randria Manampisoa. What a name. From Madagascar. And then the ordinary members that include our very own Robert Shimoshili, who is the president of the NFA, as I said. That will include Ms. Brenda Kunda from Zambia. That will include Lijane Nthunya from Lesotho. Nkobile Magwizi from Zimbabwe. Peter Simelane from Eswatini. And then the co-opted members will include Linda Zwane from South Africa. It will include Irene Goncalves from Angola. And something that the new president announced, Mr. Tariq Babitsang. This is according to, this is a news item brought to you by a good friend, Footy Namibia, who says that Namibia is in a joint bid to host the 2028 African Cup of Nations alongside Zimbabwe, South Africa, and Botswana. Now, on the surface, that seems like good news. But my immediate question is, where exactly would these AFCON matches take place in Namibia? Perhaps you know. Call in. Let me know. 0832 888 401. But we, not too long ago, we saw a joint bid with the Botswana, it was. That fell short for various reasons. We're not going to get into that. Then we heard about a short-lived bid with South Africa to host one of the upcoming AFCONs. Maybe it is this AFCON. I'm not sure. But that was also short-lived after various sources came out and said it's not true. So, Footy, I hope what you reported comes true. Now, we move on onto some local hockey news, where the Windhoek Old Boys have been crowned the Namibia Indoor Hockey League Men's Premier League champions after defeating the Hockey School of Excellence by 7-3. The arena seemed quite packed. A decent turnout there for the hockey final. And congratulations to the Windhoek Old Boys for winning the Men's Namibian Premier League. And back to football. African Stars appointed a new interim head coach that is their very own Benedictus Hauseb, a.k.a. Coach Benny, as we all know him, was appointed as the African Stars head coach for the upcoming NFA Cup as well as the CAF Champions League. And he takes over after being in the assistant manager role for the season, where they again won the Namibian Premier League, and now they are headed off to represent Namibia in the CAF Champions League. Let's see if they can make it further than they did last year. And in some history-making news over in athletics, we have Talia Voorster became the first Namibian pole vaulter to compete in the African Athletics Championships that are concluding today in Accra. She secured a bronze medal. First Namibian pole vaulter to compete at these championships, and she medaled. Congratulations. So she secured a bronze medal, clearing a season best 3.5 meters. And she was tied for third, actually, with a Egyptian young lady. And more medals for Namibia at the African Senior Athletics Championships happening in Ghana, as I said, was Namibian Ryan Williams won a gold in the discus at the African Senior National Athletics Championships after he actually won a bronze in 2022 and 2024. So he finally got the top spot, the gold medal, the elusive gold medal, with a throw of 57.49 meters. That's quite fun in discus. And the person who finished second was a Cameroonian, who our own Ryan Williams beat by 30 whole centimeters. Now, speaking of the African Championships happening over in Ghana, South Africa's Minister of Sport, the famous, or should I say infamous, Mr. Gayton McKenzie, said they're going to make a probe about the South African athletes' living conditions at these games. He said he has initiated an investigation into concerns raised by South African athletes participating at the African Athletics Championships. This is the 24th edition of the championships, by the way. They were complaining about the conditions at the on-site accommodation, and Mr. Gayton has taken upon himself to address the situation. This was after a video that went fairly viral by South African athlete Aiden Smith. He raised concerns about the living conditions and the catering provided at the accommodation venue. So what McKenzie then did is he requested a full report from Athletics South Africa on the conditions experienced by the delegation and the circumstances that gave rise to these complaints. Now, I couldn't really confirm if it's just South Africa experiencing this, or these are the conditions for all the athletes and, you know, our lovely brothers and sisters from the South, you know, maybe used to a certain lifestyle that, they weren't, that they weren't accustomed to over in the west of the continent. But, Gayton said, the welfare of our athletes is non-negotiable. We need to understand what led to these concerns. And our department will continue to monitor the remaining days of competition. We look forward to welcoming our athletes home after the weekend. So the athletes should be arriving back, tomorrow, seeing that the games conclude today. South Africa sent a total of 34 athletes. And in total at the games, there's over 1,500 athletes and officials from across the continent. So we'll see. This is, you can say this is a developing story, but, we'll see how things play out. Now, before we get to our topic of the day, which we will be discussing a sports marketing intelligence report by a company called Brilla Media. Now, this sports marketing intelligence report is about basically the sports marketing environment of Nigeria, of Niger. Our West African brothers and sisters. And before I get into the actual report, we'll hop around the continent to discuss some sports business news. And we'll also discuss the Africa CEO Forum that took place. There were some sporting discussions that took place there. But just to give you an intro into our main point of conversation, which will be this the sports marketing intelligence report. And the reason I want to discuss it is, you know, Nigeria is the third biggest economy on the continent, right? And we know about their huge population. We know about especially in the footballing context, what they're able to produce. But what do things actually look like on the ground in the sporting context, you know? But especially considering how in Namibia we talk a lot about how our small population, you know, maybe 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago now, I can't remember, when I spoke about the whole sports broadcasting thing and how the ministry told us that, you know, the reason there's no sports broadcasting rights and things of that nature is because our market is quote unquote not ready. You know, people always use the excuse, we have a small population, so you can't charge for certain things like you do in South Africa, like you would in Nigeria, and so on and so on. But now this, this company, Brilla Media, whose background we'll get into when we discuss the actual topic, they went on the ground. They did some research, and they compiled everything into a nice report that we're going to discuss, and I'm sure many of you will learn some things. You know, I learned some things in preparation for this show. So, yeah, we'll get into that shortly. But first, before we go to West Africa, we go to the East Africa, where Nike opened up its first East African flagship store. They did this in Nairobi, Kenya. And in a few moments, speaking now about the Africa CEO Forum, we will hear some more about what's happening in Nairobi, Kenya. But, you know, the sportswear giant has opened its first flagship store in East Africa, setting up at Sarit Center in Nairobi's Westlands District. The launch event drew Kenya Athletics President Jackson Atuwe and Team Kenya First Deputy President Barnaba Korir, alongside marathon icon Eliud Kipchoge. You know, speaking of Eliud Kipchoge, I'm thinking now, you know, okay, I answered my own question, because I was going to ask, why wasn't the gentleman that broke the world record in, like, actual official racing conditions the first person to run a sub 2 hour marathon? Why wasn't he at this event? And then I just remembered he's actually an Adidas athlete. So, you know, Eliud still gets to enjoy the title of sub 2 hour marathon, you know, cause Nike spent a lot of money on making that happen. It was a big marketing thing, but it didn't happen in an official race. And since then, even with the shoes that they were marketing at the time, no one did it in a pair of Nikes. The two people that did it in an official competition did it in a pair of Adidas. So Nike losing ground in that context. But the reason I bring this up is because the business case is clear. And what do I mean by that? What I mean by that is Nairobi has spent the last, let's say, 10 years positioning itself as a magnet for global consumer brands. And Nike is the latest to, you know, follow suit and say, you know what, Kenya, you guys are doing good things. We want to be involved. And the report says that East Africa's expanding urban middle class, their young demographics, and deepening fitness culture have made the Kenyan capital increasingly difficult for multinationals to ignore. And like I said, like I alluded to earlier, Kenya for a long time has leveraged Kenyan athletes, to sell products worldwide, whether it's through things like Eliud Kipchoge. Basically, the opening of this store has closed a gap. And this gap was between brand affinity and commercial, infrastructure. So, you know, a lot of Kenyans like Nike, but they never really had a place to officially buy Nikes from. Same with us. I know a lot of us love Nikes, but we don't have an official store to buy their products from. And this makes it the 41st location in which Nike has a store. And the most stores that they have on the continent, they have 18 in Egypt, 14 in SA, 4 in Morocco, 3 in Algeria, and now 1 each in Nigeria and Kenya. I'm surprised there's no store in Ghana as well, actually. Yes, that's a small tidbit from East Africa. And then from East, we head back south where SA Rugby locked in with SuperSport as a broadcaster in a landmark Canal Plus rights renewal. So the South African rugby, that is SARU, and the Canal Plus group have renewed their multi-year domestic broadcast rights agreement, keeping SuperSports as the exclusive home of South African rugby across sub-Saharan Africa. I know a lot of you guys listening right now, you enjoy watching the Springboks, so you are going to be able to continue doing so on your favorite channel, that is SuperSport. Remember, some time back we discussed how with Canal Plus now taking over MultiChoice, a lot of the negotiations that used to take place between SuperSport and various leagues around the world in terms of what to broadcast on SuperSport used to be handled by whether it was a SuperSport team or a MultiChoice team, but now it is being handled by the French company Canal Plus, and they, as a result, you know, they cut a lot of things that we used to watch. For example, we couldn't watch the Winter Olympics this year on SuperSport, at least, because Canal Plus decided we're not going to spend money on that. But on the Springboks, Canal Plus said, yes, please, we want to continue showing basically, you know, this huge moneymaker. There's no way of sugarcoating that, not showing the Springboks in, not just in South Africa, but the continent as a whole would have been a big, big blunder. Right? And, the Canal Plus Africa CEO, that is David Mignot, yes, pointed to rugby's deep cultural roots in South Africa as a key driver of the deal. He said, and I quote, as promised, we are doubling down on our investment in local content, including the sports content that matters the most to the people on the continent. In the South African market, rugby has grown into becoming a part of the national psyche, as evidenced by the national euphoria that erupted each time the Springboks won the Rugby World Cup. and honestly, I couldn't have said it better myself. It's becoming part of the national psyche. That is the goal of every sporting federation, really, in any country across the world, is for your national team to become part of the national psyche, become part of the national identity. You know, we were just talking about Kenya. You know, Kenyan runners, they're part of the national identity, part of the national psyche. You know, in England, it's obviously football. Brazil, it's football as well. In India, we're talking about cricket. You know, these sports become part of the national fabric, really. Now, we move on to... We go from south, we go all the way north. We go all the way south with South Africa, now we're going all the way north to Morocco, where Google Gemini was named the official technology sponsor of the Moroccan national football team. Google obviously being a global, I was trying to think of a word bigger than powerhouse, but a global monster has decided to partner with a African national team, and that is, of course, Morocco. They announced its AI assistant, which is Google Gemini, as the official technology sponsor of the Moroccan National Football Federation. Marking a push to embed artificial intelligence into football culture across the Arab world. Really, we can say the continent, really. The partnership was disclosed by Google's MENA team. They will use Gemini's multimodal capabilities to deepen engagement between the Moroccan national team and their global fan base. The deal carries added symbolic weight, framed as consistent with the Moroccan King's national village vision around sport, youth development, and international influence. And then at the center of the activation is a suite of fan-facing tools rolling out over the next 3 months, where supporters will be able to use Gemini's text-to-image model, which is called Nano Banana, to generate personalized matchday visuals, and its text-to-music model, which is called Lyria, to compose custom team anthems. And then other than these creative tools, Gemini will also serve an analytical function, helping fans decode tactical rules, break down match performance, and generate outcome prediction. And this just goes to show how AI companies are using sports sponsorships as a tool, as a vehicle for consumer adoption, particularly in markets where mobile-first audiences, really, let's say it like that, mobile-first audiences are growing rapidly. And that's, you can say the same for the continent at large, really. So, good things coming from that announcement. They didn't disclose, you know, the finances behind it. We don't know how much Gemini is going to be paying the Moroccan Football Federation, but we can safely assume that it's not going to be for pennies. It's going to cost Gemini quite a few, I'm willing to say, millions of dollars. And then with our last sports business story, we're going to head back to the south with Eswatini, where Eswatini's king Mswati III has announced plans to build a new 40,000-seater stadium in the country. This would be one of the biggest things to happen in Eswatini in terms of sporting development. And let me just find his quote where he said, okay, his quote is not here, but one thing I want to highlight is where he said this. It's stated here in the report that specific details on the stadium's location, construction timeline, and projected costs have not been disclosed. With further information expected to come in the coming months. Now, I think as Namibians in particular, we're all too familiar with this. Very nice announcement. Excellent announcement. Something that many people will look forward to. But it's actually just an announcement. No plan, no timeline, no nothing. So if this actually doesn't come to fruition, would it really be that shocking? And then the king framed the project in explicitly competitive terms, arguing that a world-class facility is the prerequisite for developing a national team capable of qualifying for major tournaments, which include AFCON. So basically saying that we need better facilities for our team to qualify for AFCON, but I think Mr. King...
Großartige Neuigkeiten. Imba ist jetzt noch besser geworden. Wir haben brandneue Funktionen hinzugefügt, um dein Erlebnis noch reibungsloser, schneller und leistungsstärker zu machen als je zuvor. Bereit, das volle Potenzial von Imba freizuschalten? Erhalte alle exklusiven Funktionen für nur 36 Namibia-Dollar pro Monat oder spare noch mehr mit unserem speziellen Abonnement-Plänen. 5% Rabatt bei einem 3-Monats-Abonnement, 10% Rabatt bei einem 6-Monats-Abonnement oder 25% Rabatt bei einem 12-Monats-Abonnement. Wähle den Plan, der am besten zu dir passt und genieße alles, was Imba zu bieten hat, zu einem unschlagbaren Preis. Imba, where the world congregates. Lade es herunter und abonniere noch heute.
Enjoy delicious quality breakfast goodies at USave. 1 kilo of Rice Bran Oats, just $29.99. 4 100-gram clover flavored dairy snacks, just $9.99. 400 grams of U brand peanut butter, just $29.99. A 400-gram tin of Itosha pilchards, just $24.99. And 26 bags of U brand black tea, just $8.99. Unbelievable prices. Don't spend all your hard-earned money. Get to USave, where good food costs less.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwa tafanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu omafilane Eagle FM the eye
Eagle FM. Let's see.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Eagle Sports Zone. The number in the studio is 083-288-401. That's 083-288-401. And now for my Premier League lovers out there, my English Premier League lovers out there, let's quickly run through some scores from the weekend. As we know, Manchester City did not play this weekend because they played in the FA Cup final, beating Chelsea 1-0 to win the FA Cup. That is now 4 consecutive FA Cup final defeats for the Blues and another trophy for the citizens and Pep Guardiola. Right now in the English Premier League, you have Newcastle playing against West Ham. That is 0-0. On Friday, you had Aston Villa playing against Liverpool and Liverpool losing 4-0. 4-2. Aston Villa won that 4-2, which prompted the king, that is Mohamed Salah, to go on social media and basically say that we've lost our way as a club, and even though I'm leaving, I hope that we can get back to winning ways, essentially saying that this guy that you've put in charge, Arne Slot, who I've won a league title with, by the way, he needs to go at the same time that I am leaving the club as well. The Red Devils, that is Manchester United, they play today. They played against Nottingham Forest. As we know, they have secured their place in the Champions League next season, but nonetheless, they beat Nottingham Forest 3-2. Thanks to goals from Luke Shaw, Mateus Cunha, and Brian Mbeumo. That last goal by Brian Mbeumo, assisted by Bruno Fernandes, and he gets one assist closer to breaking that assist record that is held, I believe it's by KDB and Thierry Henry, their joint top. And Bruno is now, he has one game left, basically, to break the record. And, you know, in terms of the title, tomorrow, you have Arsenal going up against Burnley. If Arsenal win that fixture, they will be on 82 points, putting them 5 clear of Manchester City. But as I said, Manchester City, remember, they played in an FA Cup final. So they'll have 2 games in hand after Arsenal plays tomorrow. But, you know, I think we can safely say that the Gunners have won the league. Of course, if Burnley shocked the world, if Crystal Palace shocked the world in these next 2 games that Arsenal have, unless something of that nature happens, the Gunners will have their first title in 22 years. It's a long time, Gunners fans. It's a very long time. But, ladies and gentlemen, before we get to our topic about the Nigerian sports marketing situation, I would like to draw your attention to the Africa CEO Forum that took place in Rwanda, in Kigali to be specific. I mean, where else in Rwanda would it have taken place? But the Zaria Group, which is a sports and entertainment development company, is headed by Masai Ujiri, who is a gentleman who founded the foundation Basketball Giants for Africa. He's an NBA executive, just recently was appointed to the Dallas Mavericks, but used to work for the Toronto Raptors. And in that time when he worked for the Toronto Raptors is when he met with President Paul Kagame. And really that meeting between these two men is what has put Rwanda where they are today in terms of sports development, whether that's infrastructure, sports commercialization, being able to host these big, big international events. You know what I mean? A global event that's been around for, I believe, more than 100 years, that's the UCI Road World Championships, came to the continent for the first time last year. And where did they go? They didn't go to South Africa. They didn't go to Morocco. They didn't go to Nigeria. They didn't go to Ghana. They didn't go to Egypt. They went to Kigali. Why? Because they've seen the investment that the government over there has put in terms of sports infrastructure. Now, the reason I give you this backstory is because the Africa CEO Forum, which concluded yesterday, on the sidelines of that forum, the Zaria Group, of which Masai Ujiri is a co-founder of, and the IFC, that is the International Finance Corporation, whose MD is actually a Senegalese gentleman. The IFC is basically a subdivision of the World Bank Group, right? But they announced a landmark partnership with the Zaria Group to develop world-class sports and entertainment districts across Africa. This move is set to redefine the continent's creative landscape. Now, I'm reading this from Igihe. I'm reading this from Igihe, a Rwandan publication, of course. But this Zaria Group, you know, I've actually seen some of the work that they've done. One of the developments that they've built is in Kigali, right next to the BK Arena, right next to the what is the stadium called? Right next to the Amarahu Stadium, which is Rwanda's basically national stadium. And, you know, in this vicinity, in this, I can call it a sports district, really. The sports district. Let's call it a sports district. There's something next to it called the Zaria Court. Now, this is a sports and entertainment hub. Let's call it that. You know, there's restaurants, there's places to buy merchandise. There's a hotel, I believe, in there. There's some courts to play football, play basketball. It looks really, really, really nice. And I didn't know until a few months ago that this place, the Zaria Court, was built by, it's now making sense, the Zaria Group. But they signed an agreement on the sidelines of the Africa CEO Forum with the ambition to catalyze job creation for the youth and unlock a new asset class within Africa's rapidly growing creative economy. Right? And basically what they're looking to do is replicate what they did in Kigali across the rest of the continent. The next place they're going to do this is in Nairobi, Kenya. And the Zaria Court is a 25 million, that's US dollars, state-of-the-art multipurpose complex. And, you know, it's something that's really, it's key to Kigali sports. Kigali calls it a sports city ecosystem. As I said, it works alongside the BK Arena and the Amahoro Stadium. And essentially, this has been a proof of concept for the IFC now. And the reason they've decided to put their money there, essentially. And, you know, some details about the one that they built in Rwanda. The construction phase employed over 700 workers, of which 30% were women, and injected approximately 1 billion Rwandan francs. How much is that in Namibian dollars? $1 billion Rwandan francs is equivalent to 11.2 million Namibian dollars. Right? So they injected 11.2 Namibian, 11.2 million Namibian dollars into the local workforce. And today obviously provides permanent employment for nearly 500 people, of which mainly consists of women and youth. The facility features an 80-room urban lifestyle hotel, which is now owned by a company that's owned by the Hilton Hotel Group, a 2,000-seat event space capable of hosting festivals for up to 5,000 people, a standard-setting basketball and five-a-side football pitches. It has a podcast production studio, a retail incubation program, which is dedicated to women-owned SMEs. Yeah, I mean, basically they proved that, you know, underutilized urban areas can be successfully transformed into vibrant economic engines, right? And back to the Kenya one, they're saying that in Kenya, the development of the Nairobi project alone is projected to create 3,500 construction jobs during its development phase, followed by 1,500 permanent positions once operational. So basically, they've scaled up what they already proved is possible in Kigali. They're going to do it in Kenya. And additionally, this is expected to generate more than 25,000 event-based roles, significantly boosting seasonal employment and supporting urban development priorities under Kenya's Vision 2030. So this is very interesting, and in just a moment we're going to hear from the IFC about why they invested into this, because they were speaking at the managing director was on stage with Masai Ujiri at the Africa CEO Forum. And let me bring you actually what the good brother Masai Ujiri, as well as the managing director, who, by the way, who, by the way, is a former national... karate champion for Senegal now, of course. But, okay, before, as I look to find that clip for you, they were on stage at the Africa CEO Forum, and basically what they were saying is, in short, that one of the key points that they highlighted actually was that African governments have a lot of unutilized assets that they're not monetizing in terms of, one, land, and in terms of sporting facilities. You know, Masai went on to say that, look, my group, Zaria Group, has traveled essentially to every African country, and they've identified the same pattern everywhere. And that pattern includes sporting infrastructures that were built 40 years ago, that were built 50 years ago, that were built 30 years ago, depending now on the country and when they gained independence and so on, that since they were built, received little to no upkeep, and that are not privately managed. You know, on the Eagle Sports Zone, I talk a lot about how you can build stadiums, but the management of said stadiums, the management of said facilities, the management of said arenas, is equally, if not more, it's equally, if not more important to have a company manage that facility, that stadium, that arena, that park. And it shouldn't be the government. There's no successful, sporting economy that has the governments managing the upkeep and the commercial element of these facilities. Right? He went on to reference, Scotiabank Arena, that's in Toronto. It's where the Toronto Raptors play. The naming rights, Scotia is a bank in Canada, and they bought the naming rights for $800 million for 10 years. So, $80 million per year. No one in the Canadian government would have been able to pull that off. No one in the finance department, no, in the finance ministry, No one would have had the know-how to pull that off. A private company was put in place to make that happen, right? And essentially that's what Masai and the MD of the IFC were trying to explain to the audience in regards to facility management. And, Here's a brief clip of what Masai concluded with during this panel. This is what he had to say, and something that I 100% agree with, 100% endorse.
Yes, we have to win. We have to win in Africa, and we can't have excuses anymore. We make too many excuses. We talk and talk. And now we have to walk. And I'm telling you, it's the time to do it now. Yes, because we have the talent. And when I talk about talent, I'm not just talking about sports. I'm talking about all of you, everybody. Yes, especially women. Yes, we have incredible talent on this continent, and we have to move. We have to make it happen. Whether it's people here, whether it's Africans in diaspora, we really do. We can't talk. Let's all put our hands. We have to work better together. Yes. We see every other culture, every other people do it. Why can't we do it in Africa? And we have everything. The best financiers, the best pilots, the best engineers, the best doctors, the best athletes, the best in the world. Yes. I will say it every day. We are the best. Yes. Now we have to make Africa the best.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Masai basically saying the time for excuses is over. It's time for action. It's time to put in place. It's time to make use of this potential that's spoken about so much in Africa. The time is now. The time was actually yesterday, but the time is now. We have to win, and we can't have excuses anymore. Couldn't have said it better myself. And then the president of the Basketball Africa League, that is Amadou Gallou Fall, he spoke at the forum as well. And under the topic of who will own Africa's sports boom, this is what he had to say at the forum.
We spend many decades across the continent, talking about with the NBA, just recognizing the incredible opportunity we had to build an industry around basketball. But we started at grassroots, and we now establish a pathway from grassroots to elite. Today, we have an incredible opportunity to talk about sports as a business. When we launched our league, the Basketball Africa League, which is the culmination of all these decades that I talked about, we talked about it as becoming an economic growth engine for the continent. And this is what, in the 6 years that the league has existed, we are starting to see. Bringing in private institutional investment, the Rwanda Development Board here was our foundational partner in 2021. Now we are in a position where we are attracting global tech companies, institutional investors. When they watch Basketball Africa League games on TV from anywhere in the world, people are saying that early days, wow, this thing is so incredible that they have a hard time believing that it's happening in Africa. Now's the opportunity is to make that normalcy. So it's about, once again, contributing in Africa's future economic development using a platform where we have a competitive advantage. This is what the league is bottling up to build this lifestyle brand of sports and entertainment product that generations to come are going to want to consume.
Mr. Amadou, you know, echoing some of the sentiments that I just described there. But we're going to take a short musical break, and we will be back. After that, we will discuss the topic that I had lined up for you today, and that is the sports marketing industry in Niger. But before that, we will listen to some lovely tunes, as we always do on the Eagle Sports Zone. That is from none other than the late and the great Bob Marley. We will be right back right after this.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Others. That's the basic mental health first aid course, free for NHP members. You'll learn how to spot early signs of mental or emotional distress in friends, family, or colleagues, and how to guide them to the right support before small struggles become bigger problems. Learn more and register for free at nhp.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
We're coming in, we're coming in, we're coming in, we're coming in.
Now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back, welcome back. Round of applause for Mr. Bob. And now we get into our topic of today on the Eagle Sports Zone. As I said, we're going to be discussing a sports marketing intelligence report by an entity known as Brilla Media. Now, let me give you a little background. Let me give you a little backstory, a little background on this Brilla Media and why I want to discuss it. First, let's talk about why I want to discuss this. Well, firstly, why not? And secondly, it's because insights like this, for one reason or another, we never really hear about in Namibia. And I wanted to learn, you know, I was interested in learning what the market in Nigeria looks like. Because like I said, when it comes to Nigerian sports, we immediately think football, and we immediately think the footballers that play in the Premier League. You know, that's all the way from, your Solomon Kalus, we're talking about your JJ Okochas, we're talking about your John Obi Mikels, we're talking about, okay, he doesn't play in the Premier League, but we're talking about your Victor Osimhen. We're talking about your Alexi Iwobi. We're talking about your Lookmans. We're talking about your Calvin Bassey. You know, the list goes on and on and on and on and on in terms of Nigerian players, whether it's through heritage or through being born there or being the children of immigrants that hail from Nigeria. That's really the main lens that I view Nigerian sports in, right? But then I also think about, from a sports marketing perspective, if I really scratch my brain, I think about all the ads that I see from betting companies. It's usually from Nigeria, you know? You have these weird, not weird, but you have these partnerships you wouldn't think would normally take place between like a betting company and Real Madrid, for example, a betting company and Chelsea and you know, big names being associated with West African gambling companies advertising now to the rest of the continent. That's mainly on where I used to see that, where I do see that, is on SuperSport, right? But rarely do I hear about the local sports economy in Nigeria. The most I know coming into this, the most I knew about the local sports Nigerian market, other than the huge population, obviously, which stands at, let me make sure I have the correct number. Other than the huge Nigerian population, which stands at over 240 million people. The sixth highest in the world, right? Other than that, I didn't really know too much about Nigerian sports and viewing centers. Viewing centers is something I've learned about from Nigeria. Like it's an actual thing to go to a quote unquote viewing center and watch a match there, right? Other than that, I knew nothing about Nigerian sports. So I'm glad that Brilla Media put this together. And Brilla, a little backstory on Brilla, they were founded by a gentleman named Dr. Larry Izamoje, who is a radio host, primarily focusing on sports in Nigeria. He founded Brilla FM, which apparently is Africa's first sports radio station, in 2002. And it's a 24-hour radio station, just like Eagle FM, has evolved and has now evolved into a multi-platform sports media powerhouse, spanning across the broadcast, digital, video, and live event coverage. You know, I checked out their YouTube page. They seem to be doing well there. I listened to their website, to their station briefly through their website. I checked out their live streams. So they have a strong presence, not only in Nigeria, but the continent at large as well. You know, I was watching a live stream of them. There's just two guys in the studio, a studio like I'm in now. They're watching a Premier League match on TV, but they obviously can't show the Premier League match because copyright infringement and all of that. But they had people call in while these guys are watching. So basically, you know, these guys have such a strong stronghold in Nigeria in particular that people listen to them or people want to talk to them even while they're watching their favorite, you know, European football team. And they have operations in Lagos, Abuja, Onitsha, and like I said, digital reach through the moon. I mean, on Facebook, they have 1.5 million followers. You know, that basically means that half of Namibia, if you had to put it in context, half of Namibia follows this company on Facebook. So I say that just to say that the insights I'm about to dive into, they were compiled by a credible source. Okay. So let's start by going through this report. Don't forget the number in the studio is 0832-888-401. That's 0832-888-401. You can reach us on WhatsApp as well at 0812-241-44. But who this report was made for really is for, I'm getting it from the report, this is not my opinion. They're saying that it's meant for brand leaders and CMOs who are planning marketing investments. It's something made for marketing and media agencies developing sports campaigns. It's meant for telecommunications companies. It's meant for fast-moving consumer goods brands or FMCGs. And it's meant for betting and financial brands targeting youth consumers. And of course, it's also meant for sports organizations, leagues, and investors analyzing this particular market. And to give you some insight as to where these findings, these insights come from, they primarily come from a survey of Nigerian sports consumers between the ages of 18 to 45, and the responses were aggregated from a diverse and anonymized panel of respondents across the country being Nigeria. And the findings were supported by industry data, media analytics, and research, and secondary research, as well as secondary research data. So sports in Nigeria, as you can imagine, it's not a, you know, it's not a seasonal thing. It's not a, you know, 3 months out of the year kind of thing. It's a everyday constant thing. And in the report it says, sports in Nigeria beats every week across every screen in most cities. But the caveat here is they're saying that most brands still treat it like a one-off by showing up only for the finals or targeting only men and then going silent until the next tournament. Now for this, this is something that's so true down here in Namibia as well. And, you know, I won't mention the companies, but you can think of, if you think of a tournament that recently took place at the coast and went into Ocho, if you think about that company, you know, yes, they sponsored a tournament, but other than that, do we really see that company anywhere in the Namibian sporting landscape? And not just to single them out, this goes for many Namibian companies, the private sector essentially. You know, we get callers on here talking a lot about the mines, about the fishing companies and so on. This is basically what they're saying is happening in Nigeria that many of us here can relate to as well. Okay, so in the survey they're saying that 81% of fans spend more money on match day than they do on other matches, on other days. This is now 81% of the respondents of this survey. 79% of the respondents of this survey say they have access to sports via their mobile telephone, their phone. And before I continue, Eagle FM, good evening. Do call back. If you'd like to call back in the studio, the number is 083-288-4001. That's 083-288-4001. That's 083-288-4001. If you'd like to call back in the studio before I continue diving into this report, you know, maybe you're a Liverpool fan. I remember we used to have a regular Liverpool fan call into here. Please call back. Let me know how you feel about Arne Slot. But anyways, going back to the report. 62% of respondents are fans who say brands inside the analysis, so the brands that we're going to be talking about shortly after this, they feel more credible. Why do they feel more credible? Because they're advertising in sport, right? And then 78% of respondents said that they are fans who follow football every single week. So every single weekend, these guys are following the sport. And so essentially 80% across all three of these, all four of these metrics, right? Then they said that, now looking at the currency, how much spending power these Nigerians have, right? They said that 64% of Nigerian sports consumers are under the age of 35. So let's say if they were, let's give it a small round number. If there were 1 million sports consumers in Nigeria, 640,000 of them are under the age of 35. And this is the most valuable consumer market in the country. This is true for most countries in the world. The people under the age of 35 are the most valuable. Why? Because they are young, they are urban, and they are highly engaged. Their spending behavior reflects active participation in the economy. You don't really get that with other segments of the population, right? I mean, think of your older uncles, think of your grandparents. You know, they spend money once in a blue moon. Whereas people under the age of 35, they're constantly spending money. And something I found interesting about this survey, right, is they said that 35% of respondents to this particular survey earn between 100 and 250,000 naira per month. Now, it's a mess because, you know, you guys remember when that whole Nigeria versus Namibia beef was going on and, you know, the jokes that were being made about the currency, the Nigerian currency now. 100,000 naira is only, I don't know if only is the correct word, but 100,000 naira is 1,200 Namibian dollars. 500,000 naira is 6,000 Namibian dollars. Okay? Keep that in mind for what I'm about to say. So 35%, that's the majority of the respondents, said that they earn between 100 and 250,000 naira per month. So 35% of respondents to this survey earn around, let's say, less than 3,000 Namibian dollars a month. 30% earn below 100,000 naira a month. They earn below 1,200 Namibian dollars a month. 15% earn between 250,000 and 500,000 naira. 500,000 naira, as I said, converts to around 6,000 Namibian dollars. And only 8% earn over 6,000 Namibian dollars. Eagle FM, good evening.
Yes, good evening, my brother man.
Yes, how are you doing?
I'm alright, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. What would you like to share with us today?
Today I just want to know, but basically when you are talking about Nigeria,
mm-hmm.
much of them, they are involved in betting and so on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Namibian also, they are picking up.
Mm-hmm.
Not very bad, but I think that's a matter of motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And also the way of trust, the platform which they need to have.
Yeah.
To get more from when it comes to markets.
Mm-hmm.
Because I see they are really doing well.
Mm-hmm.
People are involved.
Yeah.
And I think also they need to start engaging in the sport. There's a soccer. I'm saying football, because look, we have even up now, like we don't know who's sponsoring even under 17, under 20. That's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this is also going to all categories except, I think, cricket.
Yeah.
Cricket, they are well fun.
Yeah, cricket, they do well.
Yeah, they do well, and they are well funded, because remember, that the sport is dominated by one place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we know we are talking about when it comes to Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
yeah. But for me, I want to watch something like that. At least, we have under 17, which is sponsored by like the West Telecom, and the coach also taken care by Telecom. And then we have under 20, which is taken by JPF, which is even everything.
Is this the football teams?
Yeah, like that, yeah.
Okay.
That is what I want to see in mm-hmm. India.
Yeah, it's true, it's true.
Much of this company, I'm telling you, they are not really doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And once you see them, maybe only when they're having what? This fun work and whatsoever. Where they are involving, their workers.
Yeah.
But we don't see them. Talk about transnational. I don't think even they motivate their workers, like even fun work or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Never. So transnational doing any fun activity at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really, I think it's hard time NFA to come and draft those, so we can know who really is using them to not sponsor them.
Yeah, it's
true. Because we cannot rely on, like, every time, wherever we see the match are coming up, like, under 17 qualifiers, where we are taking the boys.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
But this is supposed to be land. We're supposed to have a league for under 17.
Exactly.
Then, but I'm telling you, we have a lot of companies we support to come on board. I'm telling you, we talk about even, like, the company which are involving in the selling of cars.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's buying a part from Toyota, and you talk about GWM, and you talk about BM, you talk about OG, what they do to plow back to Namibia.
Well, let's talk about Yan Yapan.
About Yan Yapan.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And they are here, they are approaching even on atmosphere here.
Yeah.
Because their cars are a lot everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Serious, I think it's that time, Namibian. I mean, especially NFA, to draft a lot of letters going to those processors.
Yeah.
So, and then if they refuse, they can come to the nation. Why they refuse?
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it's hard time to have those companies on board.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, I just want to give also the condolence to Wallace Joseph family.
Yes, most definitely.
And this one I left, yeah, please. I know, time is very hard, and sometimes this mental health is, I think, sometimes in Namibia,
mm-hmm.
people are not taking care, the people are not taking serious, especially the families.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we need just a call, man, to call the person, how you are doing, how you've been up to.
Exactly.
Because sometimes we live in the world where we live like you are alone.
Mm-hmm.
You are only facing this problem alone, but you are not alone. there are more people having more problems than you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what I just have to share with you.
And actually, before I let you go, because, you know, when the news of his passing was announced, I tried to look up, you know, some information about his career. Is there anything you can share with us about his career, the kind of player he was, and so on?
Yeah. I think I never really played with him, but I remember one time when I was watching, and I think that time I was young even, when he was playing for Chisandos. Those years of even Ricardo Manetti was playing for, I think he was playing for one. He was a coach of Cedis, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he was also playing for Cedis. He was a good player, my friend. I said a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody can remember that was a place. Was one of the hard tackle, and also he played like a midfield. He could control the ball.
Yeah.
Really, he was a good player, really. I watched him at the Independence Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Where Cedis Santos, I think he was playing with you. I think it was Cedis. That time.
Yeah,
and it was a good thing, really. He was a good player, really. Only that now, you know, especially when you find yourself in the situation of Namibia, where the players are just left like that, and nobody's care about it. Because remember, these are heroes of our days.
Exactly.
And the history is about the white, but seriously, sometimes we have to look up to these people where they are. Because I'm telling you, up to now, I know one player who everybody know, admire in Namibia. One of the strongest midfielder we have.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, if you look at that life of that person now, you'll wonder. And it's why I'm talking about, like, if we introduce like under 17, these people can get a chance.
Exactly.
To coach.
Exactly.
The coach of under 17 where he's getting paid monthly. Not just when we are trying, when we under 17s are qualifying, is where everybody's running around to looking for spawns and what. I think sometimes I blame even anything and the government at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, they are not really doing anything. You can't tell me why. We are a small population, but we have people who have been there playing for even for national team.
Yeah.
But up to now, you never follow those people how they are doing in their life.
Yeah.
And remember, when it comes to football, even football is just a what? Up to age of 37, somewhere there, you are retiring.
Yeah, that's if you are lucky to make it to 37.
Yeah, exactly. If you are lucky even to make it to 37, when you don't have an injury.
Yeah.
But once you are having even an injury, your life is done.
Exactly.
And sometimes we don't have a life to fall back. But at that country, where you go, like, around the road, like even our neighbor here, South Africa, you can see those guys, they have been taken care. But even some studio, they are calling them to come and just to sending matches and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But here in Namibia, my friend, they are not even a school, a person to be in the school board or something. They are just there.
Yeah.
But seriously, I think we need to bring back what we used to. Like a school team, they used to be strong because we have a lot of cups. We have the Coca-Cola, we have Metropolitan, and we have also, there was something also when you qualify, you have to play like a Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
But in Namibia now, I don't know what's really happening. Yeah. I don't know really.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Even we're talking about what about this sports commission, what they are doing seriously. Because I see our football are just going down every day.
Yeah.
Things are falling apart. You talk about Semenya Mate, people are saying now it's being repaired, but when you pass there, you don't, I don't see much. It's been done. When they are talking about like November, that the stadium is supposed to be ready, but I don't see really tangible results when people are working. You can see that at least there's something being done, but up to now I don't see much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, my brother, that's all what I want to contribute.
No, thank you for calling.
All right, my friend.
All right, have a good one.
All right, same to you. We are listening.
Yes, sir. Yes, that is the caller sharing his contribution. A very, 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 very thoughtful contribution. And I'm glad he called in to pay tribute to our Brave Warriors legend that we recently lost. I'm glad he was able to give us some insight that I couldn't find online. Like I said, this is why we need some of this information in the National Archives, so people such as myself who have these platforms can educate the masses as well. But I'm glad for the listener for coming through with that one and making the point about, you know, corporate Namibia coming in to support local sports. You mentioned all the different tournaments that used to exist that don't exist anymore. Why they don't exist anymore? You know, this Coca-Cola Cup. I've heard about Coca-Cola Cup from so many people that are obviously older than me. I never got to see it, never got to experience it, but I heard this was a big deal in the country. So, you know, I would like to know, why doesn't this exist anymore? Or at least something to replace it. Doesn't have to be the Coca-Cola Cup. It can be the, insert whatever company you want to insert there, cup. But let's bring these things back. Let's bring these things back. All right, let's go back to, unless you want to call in. We have another one. Do call back, 083-288-401. That's 083-288-401. And today we're discussing the Nigerian sports marketing environment. What does it look like? Right? And before the call, I was talking about the income that this segment of the Nigerian population has. And I was surprised, but at the same time, not surprised, you know, to find out what income level these people are at. And then, as I said, 35% said that they earn between 100,000 naira and 250,000 naira. 100,000 naira converts to 1,200 Namibian dollars. Yeah, 1,200 Namibian dollars. And, a 500,000 naira, that's around 6,000 Namibian dollars. And, only 8% said that they earn above 500,000, naira. So above 6,000 Namibian dollars. And basically what the report is saying that is that when you reach people through sports, especially this young demographic, when you reach people under the age of 35 through sports, whether it's through advertising, brand partnerships and so on, you reach people who actually buy, who actually spend their money. Even if you deem that they're in an income group where you deem that they don't have money or that they're not part of the high income earners of the country, they spend the little money that they do have. And more than likely, they will spend it on your brand if you meet them. Basically, if you meet them where they are, is what the report is saying. And another thing that the report says is that 59% of fans believe that they know what the coach should have done in comparison to what actually happened on the field, right? They'll argue about things like substitutions, they question referees, they predict outcomes. And they do this with the confidence of people that, you know, you would think that they're ex-professionals themselves. That's how confident they feel about their opinion when it comes to sports. Right? And something that I talk about a lot, they see supporting a team not just as a preference. Remember when we did that matrix where we went from brand awareness all the way to brand allegiance, basically, you know? They see the team as their identity. And because teams feel so passionate about, because fans feel so passionate about this, they keep coming back to argue, whether it's to analyze or to validate what they're saying. They keep coming back to the same shows, the same platforms, and the same voices, right? So if, for example, in Namibia, there was a show dedicated to the Namibian Premier League, giving a voice to fans to call in, a voice to fans of Namibian Premier League teams to call in, you know, to argue about, I think Chula Chula is a better team than Julinho, or I think African Stars is a better team than FC Ongos, for example. I think player A is better than player B, so on and so on. If there was a centralized platform or several centralized platforms for people to have this discussion, these discussions. They would be having these discussions on said platform every single weekend, every single, you know, Namibian Premier League match day. That's because the fans feel that they are experts of what it is that they are watching, right? And I'm sure, you know, sports lovers, we all feel like we know what it is that we're talking about. We all do. I'm including myself in that. And now what the report says is that when a brand, you know, involves itself in platforms like this, whether it's debate segments, live polls, or, you know, anything that requires the audience to tell you their opinion, it becomes part of the interaction and not just background advertising. Okay? So this report is saying that companies need to involve themselves more into that. More into, put themselves in spaces where fans are giving their opinions, is what they're asking of these companies to do. And also, what the report is stating is that consumption of sport in Nigeria, now we're talking about, but this is true for most markets. Again, Namibia, we don't really know the answer to this. I mean, I can give you a description of what I've experienced, but there's no data to back up, you know, what the experience is like in Namibia. But what they're saying in Nigeria is that the competition doesn't spike and vanish. The obsession is 24/7. You know, for example, if I think about someone that watches American basketball, with the time difference, you're watching all those games in the night. That's between, let's say, 11 p.m. and 6 in the morning. There's people that you would be shocked to believe on the continent that do this regularly. They found a way to make sure that they're supporting a team, a particular team, in a country that they don't even live in, have never been to. And this report has the numbers to support it. They say that 65% of respondents follow pre- and post-event analysis. So this goes back to what we're talking about the debate platforms. You know, people are not only watching the game, but they're watching what's being talked about before the game and what's being talked about after the game. And I can also attest to this. When I was younger, a football match for me on TV, a Premier League match, for example, let's say there was a Manchester derby coming up, the 90 minutes of the match, of course, were important, but let's say the 60 minutes before the match and the 60 minutes after the match were just as crucial for me. I would not feel okay if I didn't watch the match build-up, if I didn't watch the match, and if I didn't watch the post-match. I mean, now they've taken it even further. They have halftime analysis, like interviews from the players and coaches at halftime, because they've picked up on this. They know how the sports performers are behaving. And then 54% of respondents said that they engage with sports content daily. Right? And only 8% said that they spend less than 30 minutes consuming sports for a particular session. And then the report is saying that, you know, for brands to get the maximum value for their dollars, they're saying don't put your entire budget on just the live moment, you know? So don't spend all your marketing dollars on just having your sign there at the stadium when African Stars and Chula Chula are playing. You have to plan across the full cycle from the anticipation moments to the live coverage and post-event conversations. Now, if I think about it in the Namibian context, what we don't really have is that pre and post event conversation, right? And in the few parts that we do have it, you know, this goes back to our sports broadcasting conversation about the broadcast rights. Those media companies that managed to somehow convince the NFA to not pay for their broadcast rights, they capitalized on this. They understood this, what I'm talking about here in this report. Because, like I said, those pre- and post-match analysis, they're brought to you by a particular company. And brought to you means paid for. Whenever you see brought to you by, you should just translate it and say paid for by. You know, that's how you should read that. They say that a brand that appears across the entire cycle will be remembered far longer than the one that shows up only at the live moment. And then they say that when the whistle blows is when the wallets open. They say that match days are actually spending events disguised as sporting ones. And that's a point that, you know, many people that call into Eagle FM like to talk about when it comes to sporting events, because almost every show, someone says, oh, the match needs to be played in this particular town, in this particular area, because we want people, you know, outside selling, we want vendors, basically. You know, we want people selling their food. Some people sell merchandise and so on. But the report says, a match day in Nigeria is an economic moment. Fans top up on data, they order food, and they gather at viewing centers. They place bets, and the money moves predictably and, the key word, emotionally. 81% of respondents said that they increase their spending on a match day. And 34% said that they purchase additional data for key fixtures. And 62% said that they see a significant increase in their food and beverage consumption on match day. Of course, that's kind of a human nature, so to say. I mean, even me, when I go to a match, I always want something to eat. I always want something to drink. And where am I going to get that? Obviously, whether it's at the stadium itself, or at the vendors that are within the stadium area. And then during major tournaments, this what we just spoke about, that intensifies, it multiplies. You know, and they're saying that these are not random surges, they are calendar-driven windows scheduled months in advance, and they are repeated year after year. For example, 69% say that during major events, they increase their sports media consumption. And 53% of respondents said that they notice more brands during major events. So we're talking about your World Cup, we're talking about your AFCON, we're talking about your big boxing matches and so on. And what they're encouraging Nigerian brands to do is to treat tournaments as activation windows. You know, they're saying that they should launch limited time bundles. They should incorporate promo codes, tactical offers, and giveaways timed to fixture calendars. The calendar is known months in advance. So as a company, you should plan your sales spikes and don't just hope for them. I guess in Namibia, we're kind of handicapped in this sense by our sporting calendar isn't known months in advance. Like, we just heard about the NFA Cup that was announced and formed a week before it kicked off. You know, things like that is what we deal with in our context. But even, you know, when I'm thinking of big tournaments, the issue with our big tournaments is usually we have one company that sponsors the tournament. So for example, I'm thinking now of your Maris Cup. The only activations that were present at the Maris Cup really was MTC Maris itself, and then the two or three vendors that were, I guess, contracted to be there, like to provide coffee, to provide, you know, hot dogs and things like that. I'm thinking of the NetBank Cup, the Newspaper Cup. Obviously, the main sponsor there is NetBank, so all the activations and things there would be of the NetBank brand. But even in that context, there's very rarely actual activations other than, you know, pull-out banners, teardrop banners, and things of that nature. Anyways, the report says that trust is borrowed before it is earned. Sports doesn't just give brands visibility, it also shapes how they are judged. 62% of respondents said that brands within the sporting environment feel more credible. 65% of respondents said that they are more likely to consider brands that show up consistently at sporting events. And 42% of respondents said that they have tried a product after being exposed to it at a sporting brand. Now, you know, in these responses that I'm reading or in these insights that I'm reading out, I'm thinking of myself as well. And in the past, more so than now, I've definitely been a I guess you can say, victim of feeling that a brand is more credible because it was involved in a particular sporting event. I mean, let's use Nike. We spoke about Nike at the top of the show. Even until now, there's honestly nothing you can tell me about Nike that will make me think negatively about Nike. Simply because of all the legendary moments that that logo has been involved with when it comes to sport. There's not much you can say to me about that particular brand. And the report is saying that brands need to realize that credibility isn't just built in the commercial break. It's built on the analysis desk. What that means is that when your brand sits next to a trusted voice dissecting a tactical play, that authority transfers to you. So, you know, when we're watching SuperSport and whatever Premier League game is on right now, and they're doing the halftime analysis, they're doing the post-match analysis, those brands that pop up in those pop-up adverts, the viewer that's seeing them, they begin to trust those brands more. And it's not something that happens, you know, you won't be watching and think, oh, I trust this brand now. It's something that happens subconsciously over time as well, after you get consistently exposed to it. And they say that consistency, in credible spaces beats volume in forgettable ones. So this kind of goes back to what I was saying just now, like, yeah, you can have, you know, your 15, 20 pull-up banners at a match. But really what we're going to remember is when the game is being dissected, when the game is being analyzed, when the game is being spoken about, when fans are being given a platform, when your brand is there, we will remember it more than the 30 pull-up banners you pulled up at the stadium, excuse me. And they're saying that in Nigeria, unlike Namibia, football never logs off. Football in Nigeria runs 365 days a year. When there's no match, there are still transfer rumors, there are still qualified previewers, there are still league tables, there's still coaching debates, there's still federation controversies. The conversation simply changes lanes. The conversation doesn't stop. And then they said that 78% of respondents that they follow football weekly, and 64% of respondents said that they continue discussing football beyond match days. And when it comes to different sports, is that basketball actually is a sport that younger people favor. It skews towards the younger demographic, with 41% of under 30 respondents preferring short form digital basketball content, making it a natural fit for mobile-first, youth-driven audiences. Tennis, on the other hand, is more for higher-income earners, and usually older people are the ones that enjoy tennis. And that's why, you know, most of the brands that you see in tennis are like luxury, premium, you know, status-orientated brands or companies. So basically what they're saying is, if you're selling a youth lifestyle, sell it through basketball. If you're selling, you know, premium finance, sell it through tennis. If you're building long-term mental availability, sell it through football. Now, here's one interesting portion of this analysis, of this report, where they're talking about screen time. They said that they're basically showing that sports consumption in Nigeria is multi-platform. It's not just radio, it's not just TV, it's not just mobile, it's all the available platforms combined. And 74% of respondents said that they engage with sports radio weekly. And 79%, that's the biggest segment of this section, they said that 79% of respondents access sports content via their phone. 68%, lower than radio even, watch it on television. And then 72% said that they use more than one platform regularly. It will be very interesting to hear, but to find out what that number looks like in Namibia. Is it radio or is it TV? I'm struggling to... I'm struggling to see where... If most sports consumers in Namibia access it through their mobile, like they do in Nigeria, it will be very interesting to find out. I'm willing to bet that, despite, you know, conventional belief, I think our segment, our population, sports consuming population in Namibia is not through mobile. But if anyone, maybe you have some further insight on this, do call in 0832-888-401. And what they're saying is that if you're looking to build trust within a segment of the population, sponsor a debate. If you need to scale, sponsor the live match. If you need engagement, sponsor an online poll. And they said that the strongest campaigns combine platforms to sustain the narrative all week long. So one company could actually do all three of these things. They sponsor the debate, sponsor the live match, and sponsor the online poll. You know, it's what we call end-to-end advertising. Now, before we sign off, we're going to take one more short musical break, then we're going to dive into a few more insights into this report, and we'll be back right on the other side of this.
Look more jobs. Thank you.
talking. Yeah, we the people's
Sports Zone.
Welcome, 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 welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. Now we're, as we wrap up here, talking about this sports marketing intelligence report. There's one section of the report that gives us this what do I call this? A matrix, essentially, of how to funnel, you know, supporters. What do we mean by funnel? So there's different stages. This is basically the psychological continuum model that we've spoken about here on the Eagle Sports Zone before. It's pretty much identical to this, but this is what they explain, right? They're saying that a fan starts in the awareness stage. Okay, what happens in the awareness stage? What is the functional role of sport in the awareness stage? It's to have high collective reach during live fixtures and tournaments. And the impact of this is concentrated audience attention and appointment viewing. Then we go to the consideration stage in the funnel. This has to do with credibility reinforcement within analysis and debate environment. So basically, if your brand is, you know, if you're sponsoring the post-match, if you're sponsoring the pre-match, this is where people see your brand as a credible brand, because surely you know what you're doing if you're sponsoring this, is what the fan is thinking. And in terms of the mechanism of impact, the trust, you know, the person watching, they trust the presenter, but now they're starting to trust the brand, simply because the brand positioned itself there with the presenter. Then it goes towards conversation/activation. That's the next part of the funnel stage, where, you know, we're talking about structured match day and tournament spending windows. And the mechanism of impact of this is ritual-based purchasing behavior. So, you know, every time a particular team has a fixture at home within the area, maybe the sale of team scarves rises by 20%, something like that, you know. Then the last stage is has to do with loyalty and mental availability. This has to do with the continuous weekly presence, within football cycles. And the mechanism of impact of this is the repetition within high engagement environments. So basically saying that to capture a fan as a brand, marketing in sports, these are the four stages that you catch the fan in, and those, what I just described, are the effects of doing so. And one thing that the reports, you know, wants to highlight is they say that no one watches a sports, a big sports match, a big sports event by accident. The number of that is actually, if it's not zero, it's maybe, it's a very negligible number. Anyone that watches a big sporting match, you're doing so on purpose. You know, you cleared your schedule, you coordinated with your friends when you're going to meet or where you're going to meet, and you more than likely have the volume on maximum or close to maximum. So what they're saying is that a sports consumer is someone that's very intentional with what they consume. You know, things like music, you can hear music by accident. You can, stumble upon a TV show by accident, but a sports event, more than likely, you're consuming that with the full intent to do so. And they're saying that many sports campaigns underperform because sport is being treated as a moment instead of a rhythm. Now, as I'm reading that, I'm trying to think, what is, in recent memory, what has been the most impactful Namibian sports campaign? You know, which company, which brand had a campaign recently in sports that has been, you know, super, super impactful? Off the top of my head, I may be thinking F&B and cricket. No, but that's more of a, I don't know if I can call that a campaign, really. That's more just of a mutually beneficial partnership, really. I mean, obviously they're the naming rights sponsor of the stadium. They're the naming rights holder of the national team. The logo is on the shirts. So maybe, yeah, probably that, in recent memory at least, is the most impactful one. I'm thinking maybe when Drogba was endorsing Vintokalaga. But even that, I don't remember any tagline or anything coming with that. I just remember global sporting icon Drogba endorsing the brand. I think that was more of a we like Drogba more than we like the brand he's endorsing kind of thing. You know, he's the kind of person where whatever he endorses, you will remember it simply because of who he is. But I'm trying to think of a true campaign, like a proper campaign. And I can't quite think of one. Maybe if you can remember one, do call in the number in the series 0832888401. We have a few minutes left. So, yeah, that was essentially the report that I wanted to discuss today. One of the things that emphasizes to catch the consumer at every single stage. We go from awareness all the way to allegiance. You have to catch the consumer at every single stage. And then when you view sport as a behavioral infrastructure, you stop chasing moments and start aligning with routines. You need to replace episodic sponsorship bursts with architected presence across anticipation, live engagements, analysis, and reoccurrence. So yes, you can sponsor whatever cup you want to sponsor. For those 2 weeks or whatever it is, you can enjoy your time in the limelight when all the media is talking about this event, when they kind of have to say, you know, whatever company cup. But the real impact from that comes when you are involved throughout the cycle of this particular sport or this particular event. And ladies and gentlemen, that is all the time we have for today on the Eagle Sports Zone. Do remember, The Villager will be published tomorrow. If you haven't subscribed yet, send your name and your email address to 081-241-44. That's on WhatsApp. Make sure to save the number as a contact so that every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday you can receive The Villager newspaper for free. And I will see you guys at the same time, the same place next weekend. Next Sunday, I'll be with you once more. So I'll leave you in the hands of none other than Jimmy Cliff. And I wish you a blessed week ahead.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.